This is the West Texas Dispatch. I'm George Levesque. In the Texas Republican primary for U.S. Senate, the latest campaign finance reports from the Federal Election Commission show Senator John Cornyn with a substantial lead over Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and Houston area Congressman Wesley Hunt. Most independent polling shows Cornyn either in a dead heat with Paxton or trailing him. Houston Public Media's Andrew Schneider examines the shape of the contest with just a week to go before the start of early voting.
If you're in Texas and anywhere near a TV, it's hard not to notice there's a Republican Senate contest in progress, and the tone is largely negative.
Paxton enriched himself, lied on loans, funded pro-amnesty groups.
Privately, they're perfectly in step. Crockett calls Cornyn her best partner in the Senate.
Wesley Hunt backed Hillary, abandoned Trump, and abandoned Texas.
The three main candidates and their allied super PACs have spent tens of millions of dollars on advertising since Paxton announced he was challenging Cornyn, the incumbent, last April. The latest poll shows the attorney general pulling away from Cornyn after a race that has been tight for months.
Neither of these candidates need to introduce themselves to Republican primary voters.
Joshua Blank is research director for the Texas Politics Project at UT Austin.
They've both been voted for many, many times by the Republicans who are largely going to be participating in these primary elections. So the role that a big ad buy can really have at this point is already going to be minimal.
The same can't be said for Congressman Wesley Hunt, who was less known than Cornyn or Paxton outside his Houston area base before Hunt entered the race last fall. Most independent polling shows him either in third place or tied with Cornyn for second behind Paxton. Hunt has been focusing most of his fire on Cornyn, particularly Cornyn's age. Cornyn just turned 74, while Hunt is 44. Here's Hunt in a recent appearance on Newsmax.
There's a reason why our vice president is 41 years old. There's a reason why our secretary of state is in his early 50s. There's a reason why our secretary of war is in his mid-40s. Because President Trump understands that we're going to need leadership for the future, not just now, but for the next 8, 12, 16 years.
Many of the arguments in the Republican Senate primary seem to boil down to the question of which candidate will most support President Trump and his agenda. Here's Paxton talking about Cornyn on the Mark Davis Show.
He's never liked Trump. He didn't want him to win in 2016. I've got clips of that. He didn't want him to win in 2024. He suggested he was a criminal. There's nothing about John Cornyn that's real right now. It's all fake to win a primary because he knows that the voters like Donald Trump.
Paxton and Hunt have both criticized Cornyn's statements during the 2016 and 2024 presidential campaigns, and after Trump's loss in 2020, that they say showed less than full-throated support of Trump. But Cornyn himself stresses his legislative record is one of near total support for the president.
There's a lot at stake with President Trump's second term of office. I'd like to continue to help him accomplish his priorities and goals.
Cornyn spoke with Houston Public Media last month.
Unfortunately, my opponents are people who frankly just want to join those ranks of performance artists who want to come to Washington, D.C. and want to become famous, get the most clicks on social media, and raise money. But the job entails a whole lot more than that.
Cornyn voted to acquit Trump in both of his Senate impeachment trials. He says he's concerned about the prospects of a third Trump impeachment if Democrats recapture Congress, which he thinks is more likely if Paxton becomes the GOP Senate nominee.
I think the attorney general has discredited himself. He claims to be a victim, but strangely enough, most of the things that has happened to him, like his impeachment, like the referral by his own senior staff to the FBI for interfering in a criminal investigation, and blowing up basically his own family are the result of his own mistakes and misdeeds.
That's a line that Cornyn and his supportive political groups have been pushing since Paxton entered the primary. But political consultant Bill Miller says it's not gaining much traction with likely GOP primary voters who tend to see Paxton as the more conservative candidate.
The striking thing about Ken Paxton is all these events, and if you add them individually or collectively, they haven't changed his ability to win elections. Not just win, but win handily.
Cornyn appears to be concerned enough about that outcome that he's released a highly controversial ad, not against his Republican opponents, but against the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, weaving in footage of ISIS.
Radical Islam is a bloodthirsty ideology.
Governor Greg Abbott has labeled CARE a terrorist organization, and Paxton has asked a judge to shut down the group's operations in Texas. Edward Achmed Mitchell is a civil rights attorney and member of a political organization aligned with CARE.
What John Cornyn, Ken Paxton, and others are doing is tripping over each other to see who can be more anti-Muslim, who can stir up more fear of Texas Muslims in order to win votes.
Mitchell says the Republican Senate candidates are putting a bullseye on the backs of the state's 300,000-plus Muslims. And he says Cornyn in particular should know better.
John Cornyn is mixing pictures of ISIS, the extremist group, with a reference to CARE, our civil rights group, even though ISIS quite literally called for the assassination of CARE's director because we spoke up against their terrorism.
Cornyn's campaign declined to comment on the ad beyond the press release that accompanied it. Both Paxton and Hunt declined to be interviewed for this story. As for who ultimately benefits from all the negative politics, Bill Miller, the political consultant, says the answer may be the Democrats.
I think that's the best thing that they can hope for, is that the Republicans self-destruct or destructive toward one another during the primary and weakens them immeasurably for the fall. That's how you win the race if you're a Democrat these days in Texas.
Miller says the three-cornered Republican primary contest is all but certain to go to a runoff that will take place May 26th. By that point, the Democratic nominee is likely to have been decided for more than 2 months. I'm Andrew Schneider in Houston.
Pundits across the political spectrum were stunned by the victory of Texas Democratic Labor leader Taylor Rimmett in a special election runoff for the Texas Senate seat in District 9. Now, KTTZ's Brad Burt reports fellow Democratic candidates in West Texas are hoping similar strategies can bring positive results in their own deep red districts.
SD 19, a more than 40-year stronghold for Texas Republicans, has turned blue, at least temporarily. Taylor Rimmett took a 14% win over his GOP opponent, Lee Wobsgons. Rimmett will hold the seat until the two meet again for an even tougher matchup in November's general elections. For Malik Williams, a Democratic candidate running for Texas House District 83, which covers parts of Lubbock and 10 other West Texas counties, the result was motivating.
It made me hopeful. It put a smile on my face. And it wasn't just the victory that made me hopeful. It was the numbers.
Williams is facing incumbent Republican representative and Texas House Speaker Dustin Burroughs in November, an opponent with more than $4 million in campaign finances, according to January reports, in a district that has voted for Republicans nonstop since 1985. But for Williams, Rimmett's upset hints that the crucial numbers in this year's Texas elections could be more than just the dollars. Wobsgons raised around $2.6 million against Rimmett's $570,000, but Rimmett set a goal of meeting voters on the street and knocking on around 40,000 doors, and the block walking seems to have paid off for now. Still, when around a third of eligible voters in District 83 have supported Burroughs in recent elections, Williams believes there's room for the district to shift by taking a similar approach to get voters engaged.
People showed up and they won. They won on the issues that matter to the people. Affordability, making sure we have a democracy to give to the next generation, making sure the next generation actually has their essential needs met. That's how you win elections, talking to the people.
Williams, a family law attorney with Legal Aid, said he's made an effort with his campaign to focus on less traditional advertising and more on meeting voters face-to-face. And what he's heard is that many basic needs are not being met, primarily on issues like affordability and education. A 2025 survey by the Texas Association of School Business Officials reported that about 42% of responding school districts ended fiscal year 2024 in a deficit. Months later, Lubbock ISD closed and consolidated three local schools. Despite some funding from the Texas legislature last year, Lubbock ISD still ended the year with a $7.6 million deficit, so the anxiety of continuing consolidations in Lubbock remains ever present. Kyle Rabel announced his intent to run as a Democrat for U.S. Congressional District 19 in May 2025, 6 months before Republican incumbent Jody Arrington announced he would not run again. District 19 stretches from the New Mexico border south of Amarillo, covering Plainview and Lubbock, off the Caprock to Abilene and Wichita Falls in the east. Democrats in Texas CD 19, where Trump won by more than 50% in 2024, face an even tougher fight than Rimmett. Rabel has been driving across the district, but he said what he's hearing is often the same.
It's the same issues. It's affordability.
To get his name on the ballot, Rabel collected over 1,200 signatures on a petition by block walking, similar to Ramette's efforts in Tarrant County.
The Republicans can outspend us. They can do whatever they want, but we can outwork them if we just put our nose to the grindstone. And that's what he did.
As an Air Force veteran, aircraft mechanic, and union leader, many supporters called Ramette's victory a, quote, win for the working people. Rabel, also a veteran, shares union membership and endorsement with Ramette among the AFL-CIO, and he believes those relationships go beyond the political party for many Texans.
He won on pure hard work and dedication to the cause. And that cause is labor, really. I mean, the Democratic Party is what he ran with, but his cause was for the working class.
Rabel has communicated with Teamsters from the Tyson Foods beef plant in Amarillo, who were working to finalize better pay and benefits from the corporation until the announcement that more than 1,700 workers would be laid off in January. Tyson Foods, one of the largest employers in the Amarillo area, attributed the layoffs to historic declines in cattle numbers, adding the recent influx of large data centers from Amarillo to Abilene, pushing up housing costs and driving fears of taking water and land in a district that produces some of the largest agriculture and livestock sales numbers in the country for cotton and cattle. Rabel said it's easy to see where many of the concerns of working class West Texans are coming from.
People want to see that change, and it doesn't matter if it comes from the left or the right. It's a top versus down issue, and I think people are starting to see that.
Rabel said he hopes to apply anti-monopoly laws that are already in place, as well as improve regulations on imports and data center construction. Before he could do anything, however, Rabel would have to get elected. In a district that hasn't elected a Democrat in more than 40 years, Rabel's not taking Ramette's upset as a sign that anything in Texas is a given. Rabel said he's been out block walking 2 days a week, adding that that will only increase getting closer to the summer.
It's not going to be doing huge events where you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's instead going to be going to knock on their doors and being in their neighborhoods, going to the community meetings. And that's exactly what I'm doing, and I know that's exactly what Malik is doing as well.
While this year's general election ballot will present Democratic candidates competing in every state and federal race for the first time in Texas history, the actual effect of the door-knocking methods of Rabel and Williams, as well as Ramette, will not be truly tested until November 3rd. I'm Brad Burt in Lubbock.
This is the West Texas Dispatch. I'm George Levesque. Affordable housing options in Abilene are scarce, recently catching national attention with a Time magazine article exploring the impact of the AI data center boom on Abilene's housing market. With Abilene officials set to consider a proposal for new housing this week, KACU's Bailey Simon brings us more on the impact limited housing is having on the city's homeless population and low-income families.
Looking back to April of 2023, Abilene had a shortage of more than 5,000 housing units. That was according to an affordable housing report done by PadSplit, an online platform that helps renters find a place to live. Since then, around 6,000 workers have moved to Abilene to construct the Stargate Data Center, putting immense pressure on the already stretched affordable housing market. Gene Reed, Chief Executive Officer of the Abilene Housing Authority, says the influx of workers has put a spotlight on the city's ongoing housing issues.
Simple supply and demand. The demand is tremendously outweighing the supply of units, which is driving up those rental units, which is making it very challenging for our low-income families to either find the unit or be able to afford the unit.
The Abilene Housing Authority works on behalf of the federal government to administer the Housing Choice Voucher Program, not just in Abilene, but in 20 counties across West Texas. Those who qualify for assistance receive a voucher that they can use in any of the counties that the Housing Authority serves. But, for a long time, the need has been greater than the available help. Reed says he tells senators and congressmen in D.C. that Abilene needs more funding to help assist families in the community, because
when the rental rates really start to explode, that doesn't send us any more money. It just means that we can house fewer families.
Right now, Reed says his agency's waiting list is 8,000 households long and growing every day. And for some of the individuals and families, the wait for help puts them in danger of becoming unhoused. Gage Roach is a founder of Joy Over One Ministries, a ministry that serves individuals experiencing homelessness in Abilene. Roach says he could see the Abilene homeless population doubling within the next 10 years, since the Stargate Data Center will create just a few hundred permanent on-site jobs.
When the construction's done and all of those employees leave, we're going to be left with a high housing market, no one able to afford it, and a lot of displaced peoples.
Roach calls upon churches to help the homeless population and low-income families more than they are right now. He says he's frustrated with the churches that did not open up shelter during the winter storm that hit Abilene at the end of January.
With Abilene being the big church center that it is and having as many churches as we do, you know, Christ calls us to take care of the people that, you know, are poor and weak and, you know, need our help. And I think we've really forgotten that, and the churches have really forgotten that.
But local groups and church programs did work together, and the city's most vulnerable found ways to get through the bitter cold days of ice and snow. Emergency Management Coordinator for the City of Abilene, Vincent Cantu, says there were no emergencies related to people experiencing homelessness.
Working with our homelessness network and our Salvation Army and other organizations that support this population, I believe we were able to find a solution and get those individuals the shelter that they needed.
The Salvation Army slept an average of 60 people per night and kept their shelter open during the day as a warming center. Joe Burton, commanding officer of the Salvation Army in Abilene, says that in total, they provided close to 700 people with life-saving shelter from freezing temperatures.
Fortunately, we did not see any more additional assistance that was needed, so the Salvation Army was able to provide that ministry to the community.
Some of the new tiny housing and RV park spaces being built to meet the current demand have an end date with a plan to convert them into new uses. Burton says he is concerned that transient workers may be vulnerable to falling into homelessness once their work contract expires. And in the meantime, the region's low-income residents will still be searching for affordable rentals. And that's pushing some people to move their search for housing further away. Gene Reed says even though his staff recommends that approach, it presents additional problems.
So for some of the low-income families that we service, they don't always have reliable transportation and they depend on the bus system to get around town from time to time.
This leaves the low-income sector of the city with a difficult choice. Find a place to live that's farther away and create new complications for employment, or fight for the limited options for affordable housing. Even those who have their own transportation might not be able to afford more for gas and the impact of extra miles on a vehicle. The bottom line is that Abilene has a problem that requires the input of officials, social service providers, and community leaders to solve.
We are willing to help in any way that we possibly can in terms of building additional housing, you know, for low-income and middle-income families through workforce housing.
There is some work being done. Landmark on Cypress, a historical downtown building built in 1923, is being renovated to include 49 units of affordable housing. The Overland Property Group website says the complex will welcome residents this spring. The Abilene City Council approved a resolution of support for the development in February of 2025, after initially denying support in January. There is another request on the council agenda to be reviewed at this week's meeting. Abilene City Manager Emily Crawford says the city is working to encourage public and private housing development in the key city. I'm Bailey Simon in Abilene.
The Food Bank of West Central Texas is working hard to close the gap for hungry members of the big country. They've been working hard on renovations to create a drive-through distribution center. And mobile food pantry stops are helping to deliver items to residents across 13 counties. Pat Dimbach literally just got back from one. He's the director of operations, and he's here to update us on this food bank work. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Tell us about these mobile food pantry stops. What's going on with those?
Okay, so the mobile food pantry was designed to help neighbors in our surrounding counties that may not have the economic resources or the infrastructure locally to obtain enough groceries to be stocking the home pantry. This is meant to be supplemental, nutritious, West Texas-friendly foods that anybody can prepare and stretch a meal. They can be hosted by individuals, they can be hosted by foundations, churches, other organizations, or the food bank itself does the funding for certain stops. The biggest distribution at the moment is serving just shy of 300 families.
Are you seeing an increase in the need out there right now?
So during the government shutdown back in the fall, we saw a huge jump.
Right.
It has now started to fall back a little bit and leveled off at its pre-shutdown times. We do see a general uptick over the course of time just because of the economic factors playing in the country as a whole. People are struggling not only with food bills, but you have to think of how to get to the food. So you're struggling with gas bills, you're struggling with your home. Most of our folks are elderly, so you're struggling with medications, doctor visits. So there's just so much playing into this. And your normal venues of retirement income do not meet the current economic needs. So Social Security is driving some of that. You know, you can't live on $500 a month, $800 a month Social Security. So we see that a lot. And so there's a lot of people who have been widowed or whatever the situation may have found themselves from two income family households to one. And so that's causing even greater problems.
You talk about getting that food to them. So let's talk about this drive-through distribution center. What's the time frame on that?
So we are just about finished with our addition. That's about 6,000 square feet, primarily dedicated to a drive-through food pantry. So you will not have to get out of your car. You've seen trunk loading models, but this will be in the building. You will have some options as to what you need or want to select up to a certain poundage limit is our vision. We have to see how that really plays out. And it's going to be the same West Texas friendly commodities that everybody's used to, with heavy emphasis on fresh product, staples, and proteins.
The community here is so generous, and I know you've been in your job 19 years. If anybody knows it, it is you, Pat. If people want to help, how can they help what you guys are doing?
Okay, so there's several ways you can help. Number one, monetarily. That helps us the greatest because we can stretch a dollar further than if you went and bought it yourself as an individual. Next, volunteerism. You cannot help us in a greater capacity than helping at the food bank itself or at some of our in-town mobile distribution sites. We have two great ones here in the city. And then if you're listening to us from a rural area, come and join us on a distribution day. Many hands make the work go faster.
If I want to be a volunteer, what do I do to be a volunteer?
Give us a call. We will direct you to our volunteer coordinator. We're working on now getting that signed as a technological situation where you can do a QR code or you can scan to your phone, and you can do many ways to sign up and help us out.
Pat, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you again for the invite, and we look forward to doing it again.
Pat Dimpock is the Director of Operations for the Food Bank of West Central Texas. The mobile food pantry has stops in Clyde and Miles this afternoon, and in Abilene at Aldersgate tomorrow morning. You can find out more about their work on social media, their website, fbwct.org. This is the West Texas Dispatch. As we've mentioned earlier, early voting starts next Tuesday for the Texas primary election. Parties are picking their candidates for the November election in federal and statewide races. KACU's Heather Claiborne spoke with Taylor County Elections Administrator Frieda Reagan about what voters need to know to cast their ballots in this election.
Frieda, first let's talk about the state's open primary system. You don't have to be registered with a party. Any registered voter can request any party's ballot, but it matters if there's a runoff, right?
That is correct, Heather. So if a voter votes in Party A, and then Party A has a runoff in May, then that voter would vote in that primary with that party. If a voter votes in the primary March 3rd in Party A, but Party B is the only party that is having a runoff election, then that voter would not be eligible to vote. When you vote in a primary, you have to stay with that party in the runoff. You cannot switch parties.
And with an open seat for House District 71 being left open by retiring State Representative Stan Lambert, and Congressional District 19 also open after Jody Arrington announced he's retiring, there are a lot more candidates on the ballot, so capturing the nomination with more than 50% of the vote will be harder. Are you expecting Taylor County's turnout to be higher than usual? And you think it's more likely there will be a runoff?
I do believe that it is very highly possible there will be a runoff just because of the number of candidates. You know, obviously, when you have two candidates, one of those candidates is obviously going to get 50% or more. But when you start adding that third and fourth candidate, then that 50% becomes less likely. I have seen instances where there have been three or four candidates, and, you know, one candidate does take that 50% or more, but it's highly it's usually not probable. And so we are anticipating a little bit larger turnout just because of those two races specifically. We also have a commissioner race that is contested, and just simply because it is a primary season.
I wanted to ask you about voting by mail. Only certain registered voters are even eligible to vote by mail in Texas. Who qualifies?
Well, there are several reasons. One of the main reasons that we see are voters that are 65 years of age or older, those that have a disability, those that are going to be absent from the county during the early voting period and election day. They also have a couple of others. One, if you're expected to give birth within 3 weeks before or after election day, you're also eligible to vote by mail. And obviously, those that are confined in jail, but, you know, are still eligible.
And voters have until February 20th to request the mail ballot, right?
That is correct. And we try to make sure that voters understand that February 20th date is not a postmark date. That is the date that we have to receive it. We have to have it in our office. So they need to be sure that if they're going to mail that application, they need to get it in the mail in plenty of time that we receive it by February 20th. Or they can come in person and fill out an application and leave it with us.
And I wanted to ask you about postmarks. They're now being applied at central processing instead of local post offices where a piece of mail is dropped off. Do you expect any kind of ripple effects for your office with this postmark situation for the delivery of mail ballots?
Well, all we can do is hope and try to be sure our voters understand. And we have placed inside the mail ballots that we are sending out to the voters, there is an insert that we're adding in there that explains the new rule on the postmark information. So we're hoping that those voters will be sure and get those ballots in the mail in plenty of time, or they need to go inside the post office and ask for it to be hand-stamped and postmarked right there at the counter. And that way there is no question about that postmark date.
Frida, is there anything else you want us to help voters understand about this primary election?
We have a lot of people that are moving into our area because we have so many construction projects and new things going on. A lot of people do think that when they register to vote, that they register by party, and they are not registered by party. As you said earlier, when they go to vote in person, that is when they will determine whether they're going to vote a Republican ballot or a Democratic ballot. Likewise, they're also confused because we have people that are want to vote independent. In the primaries in Texas, it is only Republican or Democratic that you can choose to vote. It does not matter how you vote in November. A lot of people think, well, if I vote in Party A in the primary, do I have to stay with that party in November? The primary is the only time that you will have to vote one party or the other. Basically, the primary is a nominating process for the parties. In November, when people go to vote in November, their ballots will contain Republican, Democrat, Independent, there may be Libertarian candidates on there, and so forth. And so we just also want to remind people that early voting starts on Tuesday, February 17th. Monday, February 16th is a legal holiday, so there will not be any voting on that day. So voters will have 11 full days to cast their ballots. And we're just asking and encouraging people to come vote and vote early because of the potential for lines on election day.
Well, thank you so much. You always do such a great job of helping us keep our folks informed, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you very much, Heather. I appreciate you calling.
Frieda Reagan is the elections administrator for Taylor County. The polls open for early voting Tuesday, February 17th, and that ends February 27th. Primary election day is March 3rd. We will bring you conversations with the candidates in the upcoming weeks. Valentine's Day just around the corner, it seems only fitting that today's tale is all about love. In true West Texas style, this story revolves around hard work, sweat, and one anvil that changed everything. This is the story of how one man's love for blacksmithing led to him finding his favorite anvil and the love of his life. Don Morlock of Brownwood has our story.
For some context, I was an artist blacksmith in our community for 25 years. And so this story was written to guys that are interested in blacksmithing. So it was a Facebook page dedicated to blacksmiths. And so I posted a picture of an anvil. And this story is kind of about this anvil, kind of. It's a plug into something more important than an anvil. When this story was posted, I was overwhelmed with response. And so it made me think, oh, that was kind of fun. So I've started writing more stories, but now I don't post them on Facebook. So here's my story. And remember, it was posted with the picture of an anvil. There's few things in life I love more than this fine old girl. Look at the thin waist, those sharp, long lines. Yes, she's been replaced by another, now only the gathering of dust. Oh, but how many years did we toil together with white-hot steel laid across her? She's standing strong and firm as mighty hammer blows rain down, my sweat pooling and soon evaporating off her warm surface. It's a tragic story, for after years of faithful service, she was gently set aside and replaced with another. You know what I mean, that newer, younger one that didn't show the many years of use. Oh, my new one was not as thin-waisted and was not as long, but she was double-horned and was of European descent. It served me well, but my heart and my memories are with my first love. It was many years before, just out of the Navy and now living at the Peaceful Kingdom, a hippie commune out in East Texas. There, doing the old school style of apprentice learning to be a blacksmith. While there, my sister put me in contact with her former roommate, a very cute South Texas farm girl. And another friend of the family hooked me up with the Texas A&M queen of something or another. Two pretty girls who both have my attention, but that South Texas farm girl knew how to play her cards. One day she drives up to the blacksmith shop. It's hot, humid. I'm drenched in sweat and the grime of a long day. Hey, Dawn, I was down the road at Chapel Hill. You know that junk store there? They have a big anvil for $100. I've owned that anvil since that day, the anvil that I love. And you know that college girl, the queen of something or another? I never did call her back. Yes, there's few things in this world that I love more than my thin-waisted anvil, but there is one for sure, and it's that South Texas farm girl that introduced her to me. Maybe it's time to put her back up on the stand and feel that white-hot iron sweat dripping down. I started my blacksmithing, as the story said, right out of the Navy. So I did 25 years, and then I had a neck injury. That injury was from football, high school football, but it caught up with me like that stuff does. And so I had to get out of it and get that fixed because, you know, my neck was about like this. But I'm getting back in the blacksmith shop just to play. I got to go to Czechoslovakia when the Iron Curtain was still up, and I got to go as a study there, and I got exposed to the European-style anvil, which is double horn, the horn on both sides. And so after I got back from that trip, I had to have one. And so Debbie got me that anvil. You know, she was in the world of art. That's beautiful, that curve.
This West Texas love story was from Don Morlock in Brownwood. We recorded his story at Intermission Bookshop. We'll be collecting more stories for our West Texas Roots Oral History Project at the Texas Farm Ranch and Wildlife Expo. Look for more information at kacu.org. This is the West Texas Dispatch. Another vote is underway in Abilene. There are just a few more days to sample some of the best burgers in Abilene and vote for your favorite in the annual Burger Brawl. It's organized by the Abilene Chamber of Commerce. And KACU's Josiah Wannell brings us this look at the hot competition.
As the lights turn on for lunch hour at Katie's Pies, the stove begins to fire up for an exclusive item on the menu. The Big Papa is the hamburger spin on a hand pie filled with ground beef, fire-roasted jalapenos, roasted garlic cream cheese, and bacon. Owner Caitlin Wallace admits that her twist on a hamburger might surprise a few people when they order it.
I bring them the burger pie, and they're like, I ordered the burger. And I was like, yes, this is it. And they'll like give me a really weird face, and then they'll eat it, and they're like, okay, that was great. Not what I expected, but it was great.
Wallace and her team are competing in the third annual Abilene Burger Brawl. The event is put on by the Downtown Abilene Initiative with the intent to send people downtown in one of the slowest sales times of the year, the post-holiday winter slump. Community members are encouraged to visit the 7 competing locations and try their signature burger.
No, it's been really fun. And what I like hearing is the people that have gone to other ones. Mm-hmm. And so it's really cool to know that people are really participating. They're really going out to all these local restaurants and trying it and getting to be their own little food critic. And I think that's why people like doing it. They're like, I'm a food critic.
Cameron Sloan, the talent and emerging business specialist at the Abilene Chamber of Commerce, says that it is easier than ever for the community to get involved.
So it's really easy. So you can go to any of the participating locations, or you can come to the Abilene Chamber of Commerce or the Convention and Visitors Bureau and pick up a Burger Brawl card. This is a punch card that you can take to any of the restaurants, and once you try the burger, they will stamp the card, kind of like a passport sort of deal. And once you try each one, you can turn in and vote on your favorite.
In the first 2 years, the community has loved the specialty burger from the Ice House and anticipated what they would bring to the table in 2026. This year's burger features a Wagyu beef patty, applewood smoked bacon, house strawberry jam, peanut butter, and pepper jack cheese all on a potato bun. Britt Terry is the general manager of the Ice House, and he makes it clear that the goal of the Burger Brawl works.
Well, that's what's funny is everybody says that January is one of the slowest months of the year, but we haven't experienced that because, one, the Burger Brawl does enhance the popularity of downtown local eateries, but also we, you know, promote live music, and we just try to put out a good product.
The 2-time reigning champions in total burger sales is Grain Theory. This year, they are going for the trifecta in that category, but Ronnie Burke, the events engagement and marketing manager, makes it clear that is not their only goal.
But we have won most burgers sold 2 years in a row.
Okay.
So we're hoping for the third year. Third time is the charm. We're hoping to get the actual coveted best burger and most burgers sold. Okay. So we're looking to take home double hardware.
Burke says that this year they just might have the burger to do it.
Spicy. If you love spicy, come try our burger. It's the jalapeno ranch burger. So we have the ranch to kind of mellow out the jalapeno if you can't handle the heat like that. We have the pickled jalapeno coins on there, some amazing layers of pepper jack cheese. We have the ranch dripping down. We were really debating, do we put pickles on there? Is it really a burger if there's not pickles? And we went back and forth, but we ended up deciding to put the pickles on there. You can take them off if you want to, but we feel like they're a part of it.
Kayla, an Abilene local, had just taken the first bite of the spicy competitor with her husband and had nothing but praise for it.
It's delicious. It's a little spicy. It has crispy jalapenos on it and with jalapeno ranch dressing and jalapeno cheese. So for me, like spicy, so for us, it's perfect.
This event has now become a tradition for Kayla and her husband, traveling around Abilene and trying out as many burgers as they can.
Yeah, because I think it's a neat thing for Abilene, so we like to support that and the different restaurants that participate this year.
Grain Theory has also seen their sales impacted by the event in what could be a rough patch for eateries.
Abilene is growing every day with Dias and the AI Center. You know, it's really growing south right now. And so to bring those people in downtown and give them an incentive in an already slow time is great for us. So we love being a part of it.
The deadline to turn in your Burger Brawl punch card is Monday, February 16th by 5 o'clock p.m. More information on locations, prices, and descriptions of the different burgers can be found on Downtown Abilene's website at downtownabi.com. I'm Josiah Winnell in Abilene.
And we leave you with some thoughts from Glenn Dromgoole.
You know, there are some things that we men just don't seem to be capable of comprehending. There's probably some kind of genetic defect that keeps us from understanding certain things, like, for example, pillows. Why does a bed need to be piled high with pillows? We men tend to think that you only need one pillow for every person who's sleeping in the bed. Well, not counting, of course, those pillows for propping up to watch TV. What's the point of all those other pillows? At night, you take them off the bed and pile them somewhere in the room, only to put them back on the bed the next morning after the bed is made. Seems kind of pointless, if you ask me. But, of course, you didn't. This is Glenn Dromgoole for the West Texas Dispatch.
Glenn is the writer of some 35 books and runs the Texas Star Trading Company with his wife, Carol. This has been the West Texas Dispatch. Thanks for tuning in. We're here each Wednesday at noon. Plan to join us and tell a friend. And if your friend isn't able to tune in Wednesdays at noon, let them know they can subscribe to the podcast. The West Texas Dispatch is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can also find it on the KACU mobile app and on their website. Our executive producer is Heather Claiborne, and our digital editor is Calvin Claiborne. Special thanks to J.C. Gamble, who wrote our theme. I'm George Levesque.